Now, the shotgun start in golf is full of mathematics. There's a lot of setup work that we have to do in order to make a tournament work. So I'm going to demonstrate to you just exactly how we do a shotgun start here.
And here we go.
All right, all right, all right. Gentlemen, start your engine!
Greetings and welcome to a Monday edition of the Shotgun Start. It is July 19th. Andy, how we doing?
Brendan, I'm doing great. I mean, just like that, poof, men's major championship.
Don't sleep on the Evian. Yeah. Evian's not a major. Evian's the players. The players is more of a major than the Evian. I'm sorry. We're going to apply scrutiny to the women's majors. The Evian doesn't count. I think Lexi, a bunch of players aren't even playing it, but men's major championship golf is done. But with it comes a bit of history, right? A new number one player in the
FedEx
world.
FedEx Cup. New FedEx Cup number one, Colin Morikawa. I don't know if he ever got there before this, but, you know, welcome. I'm guessing he might be number one in Race to Dubai, too. I wonder how many players have held that at the same time.
It's been a lot of major championships in, 11 months now. I really enjoyed, thanks to Shane Bacon for filling in for me. I really enjoyed. Last night you guys got in the weeds on the super season, and when it started and when it ended, you couldn't remember. I was like, this is what I need. Saturday night before the last major, men's major round of the year, super season, line of demarcation talk. But it's been an amazing run at these events, and it ends with Colin Morikawa winning comfortably. I don't know, whatever adjective you want to throw in, adverb, whatever you want. He won by two, kind of never felt that close to me. It just, if you are waiting for someone to come back or fall or collapse or hoping for catastrophe or hoping for it to get tight, it feels like Morikawa is about one of the worst options. If you're someone rooting for that kind of thing to happen, because it didn't feel like that was going anywhere. His lead, at least. I know it got to one at one point, but
yeah, especially the way he's putting it. Obviously, the one shortcoming in his professional game has been the putter's been a little dodgy at times. It gets a little scary to watch sometimes on shorties,
yep,
but God,
for sure.
His putter was amazing this week. He was so good all week long. The guy is such a great player, and it's just, he's such a machine with the ball striking. He was taking aim. The beautiful thing was you get the caddy conversations, and he's aiming right at flags from 225. He's a stud, and it's been this way for a long time. You know, I think we've talked about him at length on this podcast, but it goes all the way back. I mean, the guy finished runner-up. He lost in a playoff in a web event as a freshman after his freshman year in college. So this guy has been coming for a long time. He stayed 4 years in went through 4 years of school. Who knows, you know, what we'd be saying if he came out earlier. Who knows if that helped him. But now, through 8 major starts, he's got 2 wins. He's got an incredible first 52 starts of his career with 5 wins, which is, you know, the same as Rahm had through 52 starts, more than Spieth had, and, you know, Tiger had 8. But Tiger only had 1 major through 52 pro starts, and Morikawa has 2. And, you know, I think that's just, it's just a, he's going to be a steady force on the PGA Tour and in major championships for years to come, because when you hit the ball better than everybody else, it's hard for you to see you playing bad, you know?
It's this great sort of convergence that you expect from great players. Like, this obviously doesn't feel like a fluke. It doesn't feel like somebody who, A, got a couple good bounces, or B, is just going to be a fringe major championship contender, because there's this convergence of talent, obviously, execution, strategy, which we saw a little bit of, obviously, in a lot of those caddy conversations. And yes, Paul Azinger, some sort of mentality aspect to it that he obviously thrives in and doesn't get to. He's very, very steady. I don't know if I want to use the P word to describe however he reacts to whatever the external sort of atmospherics are around major championships and certainly Sundays at majors. He also seems to have that. But the one thing I'll say is, like, for me, the most impressive part is, like, the execution, right? He's obviously got it in. He's got the talent to start with. But the execution for him is, like, such a freaking given. Like, it's just a given part of the equation. Like, he is going to hit the shot. That the strategy can become so narrow. Those conversations can start to get down to, like, a pinhead, right? To, like, specific shirts, specific half yards, yardage. I know these are all the best players in the world, and a lot of these caddy conversations go this way. But they get so specific because, like, the execution feels like so much more of a given with Morikawa, where it's like, well, because we know you're going to hit the shot, let's get really granular on where and how we want to do it. And so it's just a convergence of everything. And what we have, I think, is you've already alluded to the 52 start record, someone who's going to do this maybe again or much more often. And it does it in debuts, too. Like, there's, does it in, this is my first major, it's my first PGA, it's my first Open, and boom, he didn't need experience, quote unquote.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think the what you hit on a little bit, and, you know, not using Azinger words, when the stakes are the highest, he seems to always hit the shots, right? Whether or not, like, he had the putts, like, it makes me think back to Colonial, like, when we came back, the return to golf, all caps. He hit stellar shots. Like, the putts didn't go in, but the shots were there. You think about the workday when he tracked down JT, the shots down the stretch were just extraordinary. And I think that's more so, like, the putts went in today, and, you know, putting is something that's, you know, got some variance to it. So, you know, some days you're going to putt, or some weeks you're going to putt like a champ. Other weeks you might struggle, but this week he obviously putted like a champ, and, you know, putted probably I don't think there are strokes gained out for this, but probably putted the best of any player in the field, if I had to guess.
Horrible stats for this. Nothing. I've got the access
the data,
to the media.
There's
nothing even behind the. Yeah, but I'm telling you, for those of you who only have the public facing, there's nothing behind the media access either. I'm sure there's another layer somewhere that might be more specific. But someone tweeted some sort of, like, average putting. He was number one, which I don't even know what that meant necessarily.
Well,
where
you could say his weaknesses is around the greens and on the greens. And, you know, the two times he really needed it, today, what was it? Was it 10 that he missed right and long, right? And then I think it was
10.
Yeah, 10, and then 15. He misses left. Both in terrible spots, like not good places to miss. And he gets up and down for both of them, and it's a combination of a really, really smart, sensible chip and a great putt. He's spectacular. You know, the thing I don't want to do is place unrealistic expectations like we tend to do, like how many majors is he going to win?
Yeah.
Because what we've seen is, like, with Brooksy and with Rory and Spieth, is like what they're doing now might not be exactly what they're doing, you know, 2 years from now. We don't know, but it seems like he's going to be a player that gets into that, cautious expectation would be that four or five major rung of guys. And it's all because, you know, I think the biggest thing is, like, when you look at the longest, the most enduring players, the players that stick around the longest and have the longest windows of excellence, they're all unbelievable approach play players. And he is going to be at the top of the game, if I had to guess, for a while, because he is head and shoulders above most of the tour, you know, if not all of it using irons, which, you know, use those on 18 holes. Drivers only, you know, 12, 13 around. Those irons are getting used every single hole.
Right. I'd say the one shot for me that sticks out on that is the approach into eight. If you're talking about approach shots, like,
yeah,
I mean, those were the three birdies in a row. Obviously, he had some stones, massive par saves at the on a couple of those misses we talked about after that. But I mean, Spieth made the eagle right at seven. You know, Morikawa comes on top of him with a great chip, you know, not super challenging, but a great chip to maybe we'd call it kicking. I don't know, it was close to kicking. That was just a little tap.
Gary Coco properly used the term kicking today. I was so proud.
So Spieth makes the eagle at seven. Morikawa gets at least the birdie out of that, which kind of felt like you had to, you know, if you were among those last five, six players at seven. And then eight, you know, it's not the longest hole, but he just cuts one beautifully into a back right pin and gets the bonus birdie there after Spieth had to deal with camera clicking or something going off in his swing. So that was the approach that really, like, for me, it was his most emblematic of Morikawa's most supreme skill, I would say. The putting was the big difference, but, you know, why he is a world-class top-flight player is the approach play. But that one, that shot really stuck out to me at number eight.
Yeah. I mean, that was a pin. That's a pin that you don't just miss it back there. Like,
yeah,
that's a pin, right. That where that pin was, you're either going for it or you're not. Like,
yeah.
You know, if you're playing, you know, playing away from that flag, there's nowhere to play away from it that results in you getting back there on a miss. Like, that was a absolutely, like, you know, just, hey, I'm going to hit this right at this. And this is arguably the hardest hole on that golf course.
Couple questions for you. Hard-hitting questions for you.
All
right. Would he have won this? If he had not played the Scottish Open, I was getting a lot of run. Big day for the Scottish Open. That was catnip. Would he have won this if he had not played the Scottish Open? I think we got to maybe say.
I don't think
sure.
So.
Yeah.
He hadn't played links. He hadn't played links golf. Like, you know. I don't know. I don't understand any pro that's a highly ranked pro that doesn't go play the Scottish Open the week before the Open. Like, I don't understand, or, you know, the Irish Open, and then you take the week off before. Like,
yeah.
Why wouldn't you go over there and just get, like, everything assimilated, right? Like, you go
yeah.
and you just, like,
yeah.
You know, Brooksy's one that, like, that's something that I would question about Brooksy, right? We've seen when he plays well, he typically plays a week or 2 weeks before a major and plays well. And now he's talking, oh, I haven't touched my clubs before, you know, since Travelers, which who knows if that's true, like, you know,
yeah.
but like, you know what? He was a little sloppier than we
Sloppy.
Were used to seeing in, yeah. in major championships. And it's like, why aren't you over there? Why aren't you
even
over there for 2 weeks playing golf at least?
Even available, the Billy Boy Baton Boy Billy Town Crier. Which, you know, we'll pop him when he says stuff, you know, amuses us. But here I can lean on him and cite him. He says he's going to play it every time he can now. He said it was instrumental and everybody should. Scottish Open. He's like, I couldn't believe it was so revelatory. I'm going to try to do that every time I can. All right. So that's your first question. Second hard hitting question. Is Colin Morikawa the greatest short golfer in the world right now? He's definitively.
Well, what's short?
I mean. When you can't see over the microphone after Marty sleeps, steps away.
God,
from
why do you gotta
it?
Bring like, short? Why do you gotta bring short? And is he better? He's better. I think he's a better player than Justin Thomas.
Yeah.
Justin Thomas isn't tall.
Yeah, he's yeah. I think he's the best. I think he takes it from Rory. Takes it from JT. I don't know.
Thomas lists himself at 5'10".
They did him dirty with the microphone. I mean, he could not. It was just covering his whole face.
They did him dirty with Cara Banks earlier in the week.
That's the other thing. Cara, yesterday.
So listed at 5'9". So what are we saying? Is he 5'7"?
Sure. Yeah. Maybe
and,
he is.
And JT's 5'10", so he's actually 5'8"?
Sure. He might be it. I loved the speech afterwards. Hey, it was poignant for sure.
Oh,
talked
it
about
like, I thought you were
going
to come on here and pop him again for saying what the press wanted to say because the press loved it. People ate it up.
Oh,
thanking.
I mean, there's definitely
applauding.
He's playing into it. The best fans.
Applauding
I love every
Schmidt.
One of you. But he did call it the British Open, and he called himself the Championship Golfer of the Year, which had to have the suits at the RNA squirming a little bit. I didn't mind that. I enjoyed that part of the speech. This was after Azinger's just, I swear to God, we're being trolled with the pressure stuff. This was an all-time performance for pressure. I think
it's got to end just because my phone, I can't keep up with all the messages that I get from friends and colleagues in the industry that are just sending me pressure, stuff every pressure. Time he says pressure. It's just pressure, Dan. It's pressure, we don't know cooker. How he, you know, Louie, maybe he's getting tired. You know, he's dealing with this pressure. We don't know how he's eating, how he's sleeping.
He signed off. He's like, in the era of Bomb and Gouge, he picked this place apart like a brain surgeon. Just like,
what did
okay.
he say about the robber? What was the robber line?
I mean, are brain surgeons like picking apart like brains? Like, how does that? That doesn't even, I don't know. Precision, I guess, is what he's getting at there. Yeah, the guts of a burglar, which is an old one that still kind of doesn't make a ton of sense. I think it means you have a firm stomach or something. You know, you don't get queasy easy. Yeah, that was the sign off was really apropos. Azinger didn't, I don't know. There was a lot of commentary on Azinger today. A lot of commentary on Twitter.
He got off to a brutal start. He called Corey Connors a great putter.
Wonderful
like
putter.
One of the worst putters on tour.
They called it like Louis' last hurrah. As if he's
38.
Like 51. Said Morikawa's like putter is a weapon. They got to throw it in. Said Brooksy should be like needs to get to like 10 or 11. Like he should be okay. Like come on, he's. I don't know. It wasn't. That great.
Maybe it was because he wasn't on the ground.
I did notice.
Didn't get a feel of the sand beneath his feet. He likes to get out there, get into the sand dunes and feel that earth. You know.
They crowbarred in an Olympics question for Morikawa. After he's winning, he's holding the jug there. They got to stop. Like, he's going to be an Olympian for life. What does that mean to you? The guy just won the claret jug. And we're, like, talking about becoming an Olympian for life. I realize it's the major sporting event that's coming up next. I don't know if it is for golf. That's all in your opinion, whether you think it's a significant event or not. But it just felt like an inappropriate time to really crowbar in the Olympics chatter.
Do you want to talk about Louis or Spieth, or can I ask you a big question?
Ask me a big question.
I'd like to know how you'd rank this year's majors based off your, you know, enjoyability.
Okay. US Open is last, I think.
Wow. Even with that finish.
They're all pretty strong, no? Maybe, mm-hmm. maybe. I think the PGA is first.
I agree.
I think
PGA
that much is clear. And, you know, we may be biased because we were there in the den, you know, running around with everybody. You kind of walking into camera shots and things like that. But I think the PGA is first. After that, it may be sort of a wash, a mixture. This had potential had Spieth really gotten on the lead, or you know, tied the lead. This isn't to like diminish Morikawa's achievement. I'm just talking from a pure. I don't know what we're actually judging this by. The drama and watchability and memorability. I think the last three are sort of interchangeable for me. The Masters, I'll always remember that Hideki Saturday more than anything. The incoming nine, probably less than Sunday. So the last three are sort of interchangeable with a clear cut number one. Do you have any thoughts on those?
Yeah, I talked about the U.S. Open, how we weren't sure really who played best that week. It was just, you know, Rahm kind of took it at the end, stole it at the end. I thought that finish was great, but I don't think you have to look at the championship as the totality of the 4 days. I thought the first 3.5 days were not great. I thought the back nine on Sunday was awesome, though, and probably the best back nine that we had of any of them. So,
yeah, that may be.
I might put that number two because of the back nine.
Okay.
But, like, I'd say that this tournament, I thought this was the best one in the sense of, like, and this was true about Kiowa too. There was really only three dogs that could win there. But this one, it was really clear who were the best players in the field. Like, and I think that's the thing that we see with, like, the firm conditions, even without wind. I think it would have just, you know, extrapolated further if we'd gotten some wind out there. But it was really clear who the best players were, and I really like that because it's like this is a championship. Like, it's you know, every day it's supposed to become more and more abundantly clear who's playing the best, and it was this week, and I kind of like that. And it was there's something that's beautiful. While it's not as dramatic as, say, the U.S. Open, there is something beautiful when you have a back nine and a closing few holes where you can kind of sit back and really think about, like, the, you know, the crowning achievement that this was for Morikawa, and kind of, like, it gave the broadcast time to, like, kind of revel in how great he is at such a young age. Like, versus when somebody just kind of wins it at the end, you miss out on kind of soaking in how big of a win and how big this is for his career. So I think I'd go this and the Masters kind of in the same bucket. It's hard because, like, it was such a big moment for Japan and Hideki Matsuyama after so many close calls and all the kind of expectations. I'm trying my hardest to not say pressure. But all the expectations that have been put on him for so long, like, it's hard to put that forth, right? But, yeah, like, it was just a great major year when you think about it. You get Phil, like, sneaking one past the goaltender, you know? So it's like, it's like, and then you've got three monumental wins in terms of, like, career-type things with players that have done a lot in the game, right? Three guys that, you know, two guys that we've expected to win major championships and one guy that's ascending, right? I don't know. It's hard it's almost like you're right in a way. Like, all those three are kind of the same category bucket.
Yeah. I would say maybe I'm wrong. It feels like all four were better. If we're talking super season, all four this year were better than the three we got kind of jammed in August to November last year. Maybe I'm delegitimizing
DJ. It seems like you're taking dead aim at my golf's better without fans take.
Well, yeah, maybe that's that is an element of it. I don't know.
You're subliminally trying to tear me down. I see what you're doing here.
No, not at all. Not at all. Wayne Foote was made by Danny Lee losing his mind. Maybe that was a better one because of that.
I forgot about that.
I will say what you just talked about is sort of, again, illustrative of, like, we don't have eras anymore. Like, golf's too good, too deep. You could call this a Tiger effect or whatever. There was, like, a minute there in 2014 where it was like Rory. This is going to be the Rory era. And the amount of eras we've had, and, you know, I use that term like loosely, not in reality. Since Rory, 2014, there was Spieth, right? DJ got maybe a taste of it. He was the best player in the world.
I mean,
Brooksy,
last,
of course.
The Masters, and then, after the Masters in November, it was the DJ era.
Yeah, Brooks, DJ. I mean, I think even 3 weeks ago, we were like, Rahm, right? This is going to be like, well, he's the best player. Rahm is, right? He's going to be the
finished third.
And now you have Colin, right? It's just like all these guys, you know, it just feels, it's illustrative of, I think, where we are going, where we are right now in terms of there's no true. Well, the Tiger's a total unicorn. That's not going to happen again. But even in terms of, like, a big three type shit,
I think he said this on my podcast, Jaime, when I interviewed him before the tournament. He talked about how after Jack, everybody was saying the same thing. Like, there'll never be another Jack. There's, like, you know, it's too deep. There's too much talent. You know, there's too much parody. And then Tiger rolled along. And, like, I think, in a way, we're the same, you know, and we were talking about this with, like, Rahm a little bit. But to me, I think Rahm's going to win more than Morikawa because he putts better.
Majors are just everything.
Everything. Yeah. Like, just everything.
Okay.
Morikawa might those two kind of to me seem like the best major championship players, just because they're so consistent week in, week out. Like, both those guys are insanely. I mean, Morikawa's only missed four cuts in 52 starts.
They also seem to be have the most transferable skills across all four, whereas a Spieth may be more limited to two. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Can we just reiterate? Colin Morikawa in his professional career has won more times than he's missed the cut.
That's crazy. That's crazy.
He's got two majors and four missed cuts.
Four missed cuts. First one was what? Workday? Whatever thing last year, right? Wasn't it first like 30-some starts, 25-some starts?
Yeah.
I don't think he missed one until the Workday, the Memorial event, whatever it was.
He missed four last year. He hasn't missed one this year.
Or he won the Workday, whatever it was. I think it was Memorial after.
He missed the first one was the Travelers.
Okay. Hey, did he hit a draw today? He hit a draw on... He tried to hit a draw on three. He's talking about a trappy draw, and he blocked it way right. Because I'm just going back to our pre-tournament stuff about how him working it both ways. He hit a draw off the tee on another tee shot. I think maybe 14. So
I mean, he doesn't hit them very often.
Three was like his one.
But I'd also like to reiterate that nobody can hit it both ways, according to some in golf.
He can hit it both ways. He just does it one way. I'm not suggesting he can't hit a draw, but he just doesn't go to it ever. And maybe because he's not nearly as good at it. He's a great PGA Tour pro. It's not like he can't hit a draw. But all right, that's enough. Colin Morikawa. Where do you want to go? The bad, the good? You want to go to Spieth?
Yeah, let's talk about Spieth.
I don't have much to say. Someone asked him, once he got the 15 under, he didn't really let go, did he? He goes, yeah, I was aware of that. I'm watching his press conference right now. Yeah, I was aware of that. What a question to ask.
I thought it was telling in his post-round interview with... One of the two, right after, he talked about how he's still getting over the scar tissue.
Yeah.
I love how honest he is. And I think that's something that needs to be kind of thought about. Like, I think Shane and I broached the subject a little bit yesterday, but like, it took him a while to get comfortable being in the mix again in regular events, and maybe this was like the first close call before he breaks through. Maybe there's a couple more close calls in majors before he breaks through, but all in all, you gotta look at the week and say, hey, like, he flushed some shots down the toilet yesterday afternoon. Like, he flushed there's two shots like that are easy right there, and every person maybe Colin Morikawa notwithstanding over the last 36 holes can look and count shots. But you know, really, Spieth, they're so easy to look at those two and be like, that's just bad. You can't make bogey from 50 yards out and then miss a 1 foot putt.
Back and forth to that being like reductive, to being like, oh, there's like 72 holes that could have happened on Thursday morning. It just was less. But I think it seemed like even he admitted that. You saw in the same interview, I think the light bulb went off as he was talking about it, that holy shit, that was the difference between being in a playoff and not, because he was talking about it more from a perspective of like, I would have been in the final group, and like that's where I really feel like I can control, you just have control of the tournament more in the final group. And then it like hit him, was like, oh yeah, and it also would have made me tied for the lead had I not dropped both of the light bulb went off. That I think I'm projecting here, but it seemed to think he viewed those screw ups. It kind of dawned on him. Oh yeah, those two shots also would have had me at 15. Those two bogeys at least would have had me at 15. So again, I always go back and forth to being isolating shots as being the difference. He seemed to hone in on those. Paul Azinger certainly did. But it was just a sloppiness at the wrong time. This morning, you know, he was shaky on the front seven, six, right? I mean, the shot into six was like 25 yards short of the green.
So
and that point, you're just like, oh, well, he doesn't have it.
I mean, how many of the first, I don't have it right in front of me because, again, the stats aren't the best.
Terrible.
But, I mean, he's had to have missed four of the first six greens at a bare minimum. Like, what? He was scrambling the whole first seven hole, or, you know, until he got to seven. It was a real grind because, like, you know, he missed six. Well, he missed one. He got up and down on one. He got up and down on two. Did he get up and down on three, or did he hit that green? He didn't get up and down on four.
I think he hit three. Yeah. Didn't get up and down on four. Bogeyed four and six. So
yeah, I mean, he only hit two at most of the first six greens. Like,
he seemed to be really bothered by that too. The first six holes, like, I kicked it away there.
So Morikawa was really shaky on Saturday in the first six holes, and I think this is the thing: is like, it all goes down to like how you deal with those shaky moments in these majors. It's everybody has them. Like, it's very rare. You know, there's just a handful of them that we see guys that play outstanding from, you know, first tee to 72nd green, right? And, you know, Morikawa played the first six yesterday, two over, right? But he didn't have anything where it was like just a blatant giveaway, right?
Yep.
At least in the final 36 holes.
Yep.
And then what will go under the rug with all this, like, and I think we can't glaze over, is Morikawa's Friday. How outstanding it was. Like, everybody's going to look at the weekend and it's like, oh, he went 68, you know, 66. But the 64, the ball striking at the 64 was just out of this world. And you know what? We talked about it on Friday. Like, he didn't really get that much out of that round. That was the round where he kind of kicked some shots away.
Right. It's like, that looked a lot better than Louis 64 on Thursday. It looked a lot better. It should have been like 62, 61, it felt like. So
yeah.
That does get lost, sort of. It will be lost in the shuffle of everything. I don't have, like, any grand Spieth takes, right? I mean, it was a thrill to watch him. It felt like a lot of people were pulling for him more than anything as the outcome. It just... The putter seems to be working again. The putter's never obviously been the major question. I guess the big takeaway for me was just watching the drama on greens with him is so back. Like, you feel like everyone's going in, and when they don't, it feels like, you know, it's just this complete kick in the nuts. That felt like thrilling for major championship late Sunday, is every time he's standing over a putt to have
all
that
right.
feeling back again.
Here's something on Spieth. Since the Chambers Bay U.S. Open, which Chambers Bay, I think you put more in the Open Masters type of a test than a traditional U.S. Open test.
Sure.
So it's since the PGA that year, really. Since the PGA that year, Spieth has top 10 in all but, let's see, three or four of the Opens or Masters. And he has zero top tens in U.S. Opens or PGAs. It's abundantly clear what style of golf. Like, and I think, like, this is, he is kind of a specialist in today's era where we have a lot of the same types of players. Spieth is 100% like the outlier among those players that plays really well at major championships.
Yeah. I'm trying to think, like, yeah, we don't need to get into it now. Like, what's coming down the pike?
Oh, he's got a T3 at 2019 PGA.
Bethpage, right? But that was just like a genie in a bottle putting performance kind of deal. That went back in the bottle quickly.
Apologies. They shuffled around the on Wikipedia.
The order and all that. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, it was great to have him back in the mix. It wasn't like unsurprising, right? Given the way he's played, given the way he's played it this year, and given the way he's played at Opens, should we go to Louis?
Let's talk about it. You called it. You said he was a pretender.
I said he was a pretender when he had a two or three shot lead. I never felt regret about that. I don't want to like be mean or pile on him at all. Like, he seems to be an awesome, awesome human. He's had maybe the best year at the majors of anyone. But like, he doesn't get it done. Doesn't close. He was horrible today. The ping pong at seven, right? Or the approach shot at the first one was so bad, right? This is where he thrives, right? Hitting second shots into par fives. I heard you and Shane talk about it, you know, when he fairway woods and hitting, you know, lawn irons. He almost aced the freaking 253 yard par three today. But that was a horrible shot in the bunker. His bunker shot, it wasn't like an impossible lie, right? He wasn't like up back against anything or up against anything. And then, you know, he kind of screwed himself on the next one, but putting it against the back lip. But
I think the thing is, like, he didn't hit the ball well enough to win. Like, there's no circumstance.
Bad.
Yeah, there's no circumstance. It reminded me a lot of Kiowa. I tweeted this. But, you know, even from the first tee, you saw Morikawa hit it like 25 by him. And you kind of saw, remember how he's hitting those like kind of spinny poof balls on yes. Sunday at Kiowa? It was yes. kind of the same thing going on today. Was he was hitting these like poofers out there that were spinning. You could tell that he wasn't like super pleased even when they were going right down the middle. And then with the irons, it was they were just squirting in different directions. And I think like, you know, this is just from my experience, when that happens with me, and this I'm nowhere near the level of player Louis is, it's usually when I'm not like finishing my turn or I'm a little quick. And I think that might be it. Like, it give the circumstances, like, we didn't see this at the US Open. He like continued to play well. You know, but he did scrape together some par saves deep in that round, but like, it just, the swing, the ball striking, everybody loves to talk about how great and beautiful the swing is, but the swing has been the thing that's kind of let him down on Sundays.
Is that pressure? The pressure?
I think it's the circumstances. It's the circumstances. Yeah. I'm gonna look up my pressure.
I feel bad for the guy. It feels like his career is not done justice by only one major championship. But this one was a complete jag job. I mean, he wasn't there. He didn't have it. I don't know if it just showed up at the wrong time. And if this happens on Friday morning as opposed to Sunday, he shoots good one on Sunday, you know, you feel differently. But I guess we're just, I don't know, you've seen him at or around the final groups of majors do this a lot.
I think a lot of it too is, I think if there's three shot lead, he might not have. You know, I think part of it
was pathetic.
He wasn't good.
He was bad. He was disgusting. I don't want to. It's just like he.
The thing is,
we all have affinity for him, but
he. If he shoots the crazy thing is like if he shoots 67, he ties. Like if he shoots 68, he loses. Which, you know, then if he shoots the 68, I would say that Morikawa won it, right?
Yeah,
and I still think Morikawa won this. Louis didn't give it away. He just didn't play well. Like, he needed to play an exceptional Sunday round today, and he didn't even come close.
Yep.
So, but what a major season for Louis, regardless. 2 seconds and a third and another top 25 is damn good.
It is. He's really good.
I don't know. There's the FedEx hex, man.
FedEx Hex at the Open? At Royal St. George's? You think it's just cross-continental and worldwide?
Well, it's a PGA Tour sanctioned event.
That's true. There were FedEx points on the line.
I want to say, I think this was second-rate golf compared to the Korn Ferry Tour in Barbasol. I mean, you look at the scores.
These guys
could barely get to, you know, to 14. Everybody else is, you know, Morikawa only got to 15 under. Everybody else is in the 20s everywhere else.
All right. Let's do an ad read before we do our Barbasol. Okay, I had somebody messaged me, a club pro. I don't know if he wants his name out there, saying he's bought Barbasol for the last 8 or 9 years purposefully because they sponsor a golf tournament. It's like, that's why he gets it.
Can I pass on one other note quick?
Yeah.
I don't know if this person wrote this in email. I'm not sure if he wants to be known. He's, you know, he knows the family. But we talked about Michael Thorbjornsson, the rising star golfer. He plays at Stanford. He won the U.S. Junior. You know, Antti Faldo made the joke that he's Thorbjørn Olsen's kid because of his name.
Thorbjørn, son of Thorbjørn. Yep, yep.
Well, intel has come in that his father goes by Ted Thorbjørnsson, but his actual name is Thorbjørnsson.
Thorbjørnsson.
Thorbjørnsson. Double Thorbjørnsson.
Thorbjørnsson. The son is added at the end.
I thought it was Thorbjørn. This is something we might have to, you know, investigate.
Either way.
But how do you go by Ted instead of going by Thor? Oh, it is Thorbjørn. Thorbjørn, yeah. Thorbjørnsson. How do you not go by Ted. Thorbjørn? Or yeah. Thor? Or Thor? Like, I'm Thor Thorbjørnsson.
People are loving this. Loving it. We just got a Marcel Seam story in I was going to read, but it's like 1,000 words long. So I'm going to have to bump that to maybe Wednesday. Incredible. Smokes like a chimney, loves to drink. A great story of Marcel Seam we'll have to share. I don't know if he's a breakout star, but certainly won the hearts and minds of a few people this weekend with his repeated fist bumps. Let's do an ad read for the Shotgun Start Blend and the Westy Island Blend at BixbyCoffee.com. We are at the end of peak coffee golf season.
Well, we have the women's coffee golf season.
Oh, that's right. I mean, you're not giving the senior any love? Depends on who gets on the boat. Who pays to go over there? Isn't senior next week and then women's is the following?
I don't even know.
So coffee golf, it's always coffee season.
You know Chayka's getting on the boat.
Who?
Chayka.
Chayka. Stock up for coffee golf season. I don't know if it's coffee golf, but coffee season is kind of 12 months a year for me at this point. You can get it at BixbyCoffee.com, the Shotgun Start Blend or the Westy Island Blend. They've been sponsors, really, our very first sponsor since April of whatever it was, 2019. Part of it, half of it, some of it goes to us. It is a way to support the podcast. Purchase, hopefully, a consumable good that you will use and enjoy. If you don't like it, give us feedback. We'll try to make it better. But this is a way, product we decided, you know, we figured is a way to support the podcast while also getting something of value in return in addition to the podcast, although that's probably of no value to you. So go to BixbyCoffee.com and subscribe or purchase the Shotgun Start Blend or the Westy Island Blend. Thank you for your support of that, and thanks to Bixby for their support. All right, we've done some of the three-horse race. I've got rapid-fire notes on a ton of other stuff. Do you want to do the course real quick, Royal St. George's? I don't know if there's any grand proclamations we need to make, any nits to pick, anything to praise after a full 72 holes now. I thought there weren't enough car crashes, and maybe that has nothing to do with the course. I thought 18 was a little too like.
I think a lot of that had to do with the wind. No wind.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like. I thought there were doubles available though. Like, yeah. I mean, you saw people make doubles on holes that were, you know, other people would make eagles on with like, I thought 14 was a great hole.
Sure.
I think like, given like the conditions, the golf course acquitted itself well. Like, you know, how often do you get basically a half a day of wind?
Yeah. You know? To be clear, I'm not judging this on. I'm judging this based on like British Open standards. It was still awesome, head and shoulders above like so much of what we watch week to week.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It wasn't like as good as I wanted it to be at the start of the week, I would say.
It just didn't have that memorable weather day, right? Where whether it be like really windy and it was like hold on to your seats type. And I think that's kind of the shame, is that we didn't get that with this golf course that's got, you know, some of the coolest green complexes, some of those false fronts. Like, watching people hit shots into those false fronts would have been so much more devastating with it, you know, if they were playing into the wind and you could see them, you know, like, come up just short and it's
die.
Like, oh, they just, yeah. Or if they're downwind and seeing guys have to maybe bounce the ball into them, you know, land right. into the false front to get it close. But I thought the course did really good job of providing an equitable test. I think we saw probably three of the best approach play players in the mix there. Yep. It wasn't necessarily power. Like, you saw a lot of holes took driver out of people's hands, which is a good, you know, isn't necessarily the best thing, but like, you could still hit driver. Bryson tried on Thursday. It didn't go well for him, but, you know, like, you could try. I think, you know, all in all, it's a golf course I enjoyed. There's some really memorable holes out there. Like, I think 14 is an awesome golf hole. I thought, you know, 4 and 5 are super cool holes.
Good back-to-back. Yep.
Yeah. 7's
the opening
a fun
stretch
par 5.
Is 8 it, and 9's kicker.
Yeah, 9's a great hole. But I think all in all, like, this will be a championship you remember because you just didn't have any of the conditions you're used to seeing. I thought the course got pretty firm by the end of the week too.
Yeah.
But
and if we're going by the leaderboard standard that we set for Torrey Pines, if that's how yeah. we want to judge things, like, we have like you said, three of the absolute ball striking aces of now or any time, really, over the last in the mix. So,
and Dylan Fratelli
and Frugal Fratelli.
Did Fratelli contend?
No, never a chance. Never. Look, you see him hacking around in the rough.
I think he
back
turned
there.
The back 9-3 back. He turned into the back 9-3 back. I really liked the conversation that he might not have wanted to win.
Because he didn't need to, he wanted to have to pay for the extra night or have to change his flight.
Flight change. Then, you know, Trip Bisson's implored on Twitter that maybe his baggage would go over the 50 pounds if he had to carry the Claret jug in his bag. So, you know, that'd
be
another fee.
There's a lot of calculations. Yeah, absolutely. Not to mention the, maybe he's not doing the math though, right? Between first and whatever he came in, probably the purse difference might cover some of those extra costs of having to fly.
Many frugal people are penny smart and dollar dumb.
One more thing on the course. I felt like so many balls ended up in the first cut, and that was such a buffer. And I know when the other rough is so high, it just felt like sort of like this bumper that like caught everything. Everything going in the first cut. And I guess when your miss is that minimal, you don't deserve to go into waist high stuff. But it just like, I don't know. The first cut was like, oh.
Well,
maybe that was me being masochistic, wanting to see like more car crash potential. But it just felt like every time the ball was just stopping in that first cut.
I think it's very rare that you have opportunities to throw some setup barbs. You know, throw some grenades at open championship yeah. setups. But I think that's a very astute observation, especially when you consider that they were watering right. the fairways because they were scared of the bounces. They were scared about player feedback of ball lands in the middle of the fairway, ends up in the rough. Well, like, it's impossible to water the fairways without watering the second cut in the first part of the tall rough. So I think what we saw was thicker than usual first cut, which stopped more balls. Like, and I think if there hadn't been water put down, it would, you know, you would see more balls go in to that taller rough. And but then that taller rough would have been more playable.
Sure, sure. Anyways, that was my other course out. That and 18. 18 just felt like kind of a little bit of a dud for me, where there was like not potential for whatever. I had potential for birdies, I suppose. All week.
I thought the flow with 14's gettable, 15's yeah. tough, and then you had 16 and 17 were gettable, but yep. by no means shoe and birdies. And then sure. 18, you're right. If it had just been a little bit tougher, probably the wind would have helped there. If the wind's yep. blowing, that hole probably would have been all you could handle.
All right, where do we go next?
The par 3's kind of stink here, too. That's the one other thing.
Yeah. Yeah, 16 gets a lot of praise for having the Bjorn bunker and thing, or not notoriety, I should say, at least, you know, profile. All right,
like 3 and 11 are kind of, and then, you know, but whatever. This is nitpicking.
Yeah, Let's do some, I don't know if it's rapid fire, but just shorter segments here. Commendations. Commendations for Bobby Mack. Carrying the flag of Scotland. I think I saw he's the only Scot in the field. Kyle Robbins was stirring the pot, just trying to goad English fans, call fans. But I think he was the only Scot in the field, and he beat all, whatever, 20-some Englishmen. So Bobby Mack playing well. He knocked one OB on 14, but 7-under. He made it on the cut line, finished his T8. So
Bobby Mack. Here's the thing. Bobby Mack never missed a cut in a major now. And he's also finished top 10 in his two open starts. Maybe this is...
Wow.
But he's yet to play an open in front of his home fans.
In Scotland, yeah.
Yeah, next year will be a homecoming for him.
He feels, whatever. I mean, maybe he drops off the face of the earth, but he feels like someone who's going to contend at opens for, I don't know, maybe say 5 years. I don't have to say 20. 5 years. He seems like a really strong player. I was impressed with him coming back from the cut line to T8. Another one, Marcus Armitage. Armitage, just because I saw, you know, he was just like, oh, it was just magic to play. A lot of the transcripts were being shared. Just magic to play the weekend on the at a major championship, certainly the Open. And I loved his strategy. He said he was turning his phone off. Did you see this?
Uh-uh.
He was going to charge his phone once tonight. Charge his phone once. And whatever he gets through tomorrow, he's not plugging it back in for another week. He'll get through his messages. He'll get through, use his phone as he normally uses it tomorrow. And then that's it. I love that. Now let's see if he follows it. But just a great strategy. Refreshing perspective. As somebody's prisoner of his phone too often and wishes he wasn't, I love that. Plug it in once, one charge, and then I'm done. That's it.
I love that. One of my favorite places I've ever visited was Marquette, Michigan, where there's a great golf course, Gray Walls. But one of my favorite things about it was you get 5 minutes out of Marquette, zero cell service. It was wonderful. Yeah, it was like a state of mind that I would love to live in.
That's great. That was favorite thing about the U.S. Girls Junior too yesterday. It was just, well, not my favorite, but one of. It was just like phone in the pocket. Not watching golf while, you know, scrolling Twitter. You know, actually watching golf in present. So Armitage finishes T53, makes the cut. I think it was his first Open. I think it was. Other quick critiques? I don't know. Brooksy?
What about John? Do you want to talk about John Rahm?
I got him. He's right here. Are you going to commend him or critique him? Commend, probably, right?
I commend, yeah. I mean, he clearly didn't have his A stuff most of the week, but scrape out a third place. And you know what, like, I know if Morikawa slips up at all, he legitimately had like a chance with 17 and 18. He just didn't make birdies, right? He like got himself into a position where he actually had a chance, which given the way he started today seemed like utterly inconceivable.
But I mean, even with the front, He had, like, just missed some short birdies. Like, this is a 66. That could have been a 63, especially that 17, 18.
Well, now you're doing the fatal
I know.
Thing.
I left it out there. Like, 66. I know. But it looked like every time he looked up, he was, like, bent over his putter, incredulous about how the ball didn't go in. And he shot 66. I can't get on him.
Here's another thing.
Felt like a bad outcome based on how he played. And that's kind of the standard he's setting for himself. All right.
To everybody that complains about lip outs, the complains about so on and so forth, who talks about, oh, if this guy hadn't lipped out three putts, they would. You know what really great putters do a lot? They hit the cup a lot.
Make it in the center. Yeah.
When you're putting well, you're going to hit the cup a lot.
They lip it. Yeah, I know.
They hit the cup a lot. So
same thing,
like, that's
speed.
Just like a thing that happens when you're a great putter is you hit the cup a lot.
It also happens with the guys who are on TV on every shot, too. And they're like a Spieth and Rahm, every putt's showing. It's like, oh, my God, how did that not go in? I felt like I said that four times. You know, like you just say that over and over again. So what else do you have on Rahm? Anything? You want to go deeper?
Good backup performance. Okay. Like, how many times do we see guys win their first major? It's just are complete, peace. Like, gone for, you know, the next few months, right? Like, he has backed up his major championship with stellar play. Obviously, you know, I think going into this year, We talked about how we really wanted to see Rahm and this is the thing. It's the end of the major year. I think it's, you know, you reflect back on the year in totality a little bit. Like, we talked, I think, about how we wanted to see Rahm really contend in majors, right? This year, four majors. I'm not counting the super season. If you go back to the super season, if you make it the super season, five of six majors, he finished top 10. The last five, he has finished in the top 10. And this year, I would say that he seriously contended in two of those majors, with this one and the U.S. Open. He was in an eerily similar position going into today that he was at the U.S. Open.
Yeah, yeah, that's honestly what it felt like through that first. When he made the eagle, you know, he almost made the albatross, really, on mm-hmm. seven. It felt like some more, well, is this going to be something where he's like three or four groups out in
the
front?
Start. The shaky start is what killed him today.
Right, right. Brooksy, back doors, comes rumbling, barreling through the back door.
Wikipedia finish.
65, final round 65. He finished, what was it, T6? Yeah, T6. At one point. I mean, the watch they had us on for him was absurd. They're talking about 10, 11 under. Can he do it? Can he get there? And granted, another guy. Could have been more. All that bullshit.
Oh,
we got a lot of that. We got a lot of that. Well, like, oh,
there's no wind, and they expected all the guys to just, like, not shoot a good 63. Score. Like, yeah. Like, they're all going to shoot 73. Like, no. Yeah. That's just not happening. He didn't have a chance at all. It was like Rory having a chance.
He was
going to
shoot 63 and win as well. I'm not yet ready to, like, we're getting a lot of, like, is Brooks the new Rory stuff. I'm just not there yet. He keeps showing up. He was in the final group at the PGA. He had the lead late at Torrey. Like, I know he's not winning, and maybe that's what's provoking the questions. Like, he's bugging me with, like, the Twitter stuff, but, like, I just feel like we're too close to him winning four majors to start, like, really saying he's coming up short because he's contending and not winning. Does that, like, I still think he's the best major championship performer going. And that's a subjective thing because he has more reps, more, you know, Louis maybe this year, whatever you want to, however you want to define it. I'm just not ready to start panning Brooksy as some sort of new age Rory or more recent Rory with these back doors. This wasn't, aren't back doors. This was like the first real back door.
That's exactly right. And again, you know, if you take the Masters out of it, where he clearly was not, like, at all ready to play golf on that knee, right?
Yeah, yeah.
He goes T2, T4, T6. Like, it's pretty good.
Right. I think where it differs is he talks a lot of shit. So, hey, man, you got to back it up. And that's where, like, maybe the standard becomes a little higher, or you can be a little bit more critical of, like, hey, you called out everyone on the PG at the Harding Park leaderboard, and then you were horrible, and you haven't won since. But I'm still very impressed by him showing up and being in the top 10 of almost every single major he plays. And he's won enough recently enough for me to kind of start to feel like I'm disappointed in that. So that's my Brooksy takeaway. I'm not ready to hammer him. What else? You want to do more rapid fire notes?
Well, we have to honor all of Canada with Mackenzie Hughes, T6.
Corey Connors.
Highest finish by a Canadian in Open Championship history. How about that?
Is that true?
What a big day!
Wow,
for Canada.
Congrats to Canada. That's great. Where did Connors finish? The wonderful putter.
18th or something. The putter
73.
It's hard to imagine a great putter like him slipping down a leaderboard on Sunday. You know, Will and putts in like all the great putters do.
The Kent State factor at Royal St. George's. That's the second home for the Golden Flashes. You got Connors, Hughes, and, of course, Ben Curtis. For Kent Reed, Kent Wright, Kent State, as they call it in Ohio. All the other MAC schools poke fun at them. I have no comment on the academic standing. It's probably a great academic school. I'm just saying that's where all the MAC schools in Ohio poke fun and call it Kent Reed, Kent Wright, Kent State. Go ahead.
A couple other things. Scotty Scheffler, I can't remember. Did we see a shot of his after the first hole? After the disaster. It was a bogey. He made like a 15-footer from
chopped
bogey.
Out of the. Yeah,
I can't recall seeing any more of him.
No, I guess not.
Finished T8. Yeah,
he was hardly around. You had the whole Scheffler Fratelli speed thing going on all weekend that people love to talk about. By the way, I was out at the girls thing event, the girls junior yesterday. And Fratelli must have done something. I simultaneously from across the pond got like people just a caddy on the European tour and someone else on the European tour involved in it. It's like, fuck Fratelli. Fucking Fratelli. There's no way. He cannot. We get Fratelli the fuck out of here. Like the same time I just started howling laughing as all the anti-Fratelli sentiment came roaring in as he made a move.
Not for me. I was pulling for him.
You're now part of what? Fratelli fanatics or whatever you're calling yourselves?
The frugalites.
Frugalites. Okay.
Hey, Scotty Scheffler, how about this? Since he's become a PGA Tour card holder, since he got that confidence that he didn't have before he was a PGA Tour card holder.
Yep.
He's got top tens in four of six majors. And the only one that he doesn't. The other two were T19, T18 at the Masters. Pretty good.
Is he? He still has no wins, right?
No wins.
So how long are we giving him on that? Where he becomes a phenol junior, phenol light kind of thing.
You. It seems like you want to set that clock, so I'm going to let you set the clock.
Hey, he's just a lot of... Always at the altar, never putting the ring on the finger. I don't know. I'm not sure. We're not there yet. I love Scotty Scheffler. He's given us. He's not been on tour that long. All right. Other rapid fire stuff. Well, it's not going too rapidly.
Hovland, nope, top tens in majors still. T12,
oh,
dangerously close.
Yeah, he was hovering. Okay. All right.
Rory. He ties par. Falls in, Westy loses to par. She's plus two, but Rory equals par despite 18 birdies, I think I saw on the week.
17 birdies, 15 bogeys, one double is what I see. He was five over from holes 10 to 17, which I think was generally considered not the hardest part of the course. And the front was considered, you know, the first five, six were considered the hardest, and he was four under on that part. The front nine, at least, I should say. Played the par threes and three over. It's bad on the par threes. We got a lengthy email from an Irish correspondent. I'll just put it that way. That he's self-sabotaging him with Harry as his caddy. He needs a new caddy. He's tried everything. He's tried, you know, he's based in America. He's new coach, the gym, you know, changed his body, changed his mental, juggling, doing the juggle to get his creative brain going. He's not won, it's been 30 some majors. He's not won. He needs a new caddy. I'm quoting the note from an Irish correspondent who has been there and done it all before in majors. Someone who can read a golf tournament and where they stand and what they need to do to get to the clubhouse when it's going well. Someone who can talk him into changing strategy when what he is doing is clearly not working, and someone who will not hang around with off the course. He needs a player, caddy business, not a friend. Which, you know, different strokes for different folks. Some players, DJ, wants his brother there. You know, some players may need a business partner, so to speak, as this was. But I don't know. A caddy feels like an easy target for major making significant changes too often. But he has... Even par. Finishes even par. The quote was... What was the quote? If you need somebody to be even par, I'm your man. Something like that. If you want someone to shoot even par for you for a week, I'm your man. Which isn't very uplifting. It's sad, Rory. We can't be going into his high season. We got the playoffs. This is the most important stretch of the year for him, for the Prince of Pontevedra. And he seems a little glum.
This is when he's going to turn it on. He's going to turn it on. He's going to win the Swamp Ass. He's going to surge into the Comcast Business Tour top 10.
Does he get like a bronze medal or a silver or something like that? Just bags of metal? I could see that happening. And this current iteration of Rory seems like a real strong silver bronze medalist type contender.
I mean, I think there's so many complex Rory thoughts. I might need to write them down. You know, there's okay. just so much to unpack there. I'm not ready to okay. to devolve, you know, even further
really?
into
you
where
holding
he is.
Back on us? Okay.
I mean I think we might be in a couple year downturn is yeah. where I'm starting to settle.
Okay. That's fine.
I think like this is gonna actually be like kind of the start of it.
Okay. Interesting. I again, my issue is more with the coverage. I just, like if Phil Mickelson, I don't even think he would have gotten the coverage. You know, if he's like hovering at even par all week and 10 shots off the pace. Other all quick right. hit notes. Daniel Rappaport tweet about how Challenge Tour players get money, percentage of money assigned
Look
to the from the major
Big John
goes
Thompson.
Towards the Challenge Tour. So this is the basic conundrum we always talk about. Web Tour players are punished for playing the U.S. Open. They get no points for finishing high. I forget who we had this year. Pendrith or somebody. I forget who made it at Torrey. Doesn't seem that hard. Challenge Tour, Marcel Siem got a cut of his winnings, was applied to, I think, his Challenge Tour status. Just, why can't we do that? Great. Quick hit note. The iCapital ad was horrible. That was just bothering me as part experience, part teamwork, part precision, part talent, part like what is this? What is
I love it? I love
just everything
it.
Under the sun was why
I
he's
think
successful.
You're gonna eventually grow to love the iCapital ad like you grew to love.
I don't
DLF
think we'll ever see it again because I don't think we'll ever see it again after this.
You
week.
Think they just like what committed to big spend for the Open?
Yep.
I think it's here it. To stay. I hope they run it. I hope they run it a lot during the FedEx St. Jude.
iCapital?
Yeah.
I miss Dunlop being on Westy's shirt. Other notes.
Darren Clark won that major with Dunlop as a sponsor. What, that's something that's been lost in the bowels of history is that Darren Clark won the major with Dunlop
on a shirt.
Yeah.
Just
you think
10
he was
years
using
ago?
Dunlop? Yeah.
No. I, they're barely a golf brand for our age group. It was like tennis there maybe when we in a little some golf balls when we were growing up.
Hey, can I snag something from the Flashback Friday that never
yes,
occurred?
Go.
Just yes. a segment. I got to find it now. It was from 81 when Bill Rogers won. I gave you guys the little bit on the, you know, what he said about the golf course and how wonderful it was, and he didn't understand why people were playing it. But one of the most amusing things that I found was the guy leading after two rounds. His name was Job.
Brent
the 36 hole. No, I can't. It's J-O-B, his first okay. name. I think okay. it was like Job Law. I don't have his full name here. I just have okay. this one snippet. This was the one reason I wanted to do the flashback, was just for this quote. He was a 36 hole leader at the Open in 81. This is from Dan Jenkins' SI piece. If you want to just devour that, that's a great way to relive that Open. I recommend it. It's worth the 10 minutes just for there's so much shit going on at this Open. But
Nick
at
Job.
This
Nick Job. Okay.
At this point, Job, so it must be Job. Okay. At this point, Job cautioned everyone not to worry about the possibility of his winning. This is after Friday. After he's leading. He goes, I'm 400-1, he said, adding that if he did win, somehow he would be bigger than the wedding, in quotes. It must have been a royal wedding. at this point, right around here. Okay. He spoke of trying to calm himself down with pills and pot, but nothing worked.
Oh my God.
He had said he had read one of those positive thinking books and then found out the author had committed suicide.
Oh my God.
This is his quote. Somewhere along the way, I rather expect the earth will open up and swallow me.
Good talk, Lord.
Talk about a mindset going into the third round.
Holy cow. Yeah, his, wow. His majors record just played the Open. Made the cut twice. That 1981 T14. How about that? Power of, yeah. Not the most confident.
Called himself with pills and pot. He's leading after two rungs. Dump that on 400-1. Got no chance.
Speaking of someone with no chance this week, can we just do a postscript on Bryson? He admitted, like, this is incredibly hard for me to figure out. Links golf, open golf, it's very hard. It's certainly the most work I have to do on. So that was an admission, I guess. Acceptance is a start. I was just pondering today. And I don't want to talk about Bryson very long. He was not a factor. If this is some sort of, like, turning point, I'm not going to call it a humbling. Does he start to be... I don't think he's going to be smarter overnight or start changing his approach to people, changing his approach to how he talks. I don't know. Maybe it's just some sort of acceptance that he's not this guy who's got it all figured out. I don't know. Maybe this week was not good for him. The equipment stuff was just a landmine he threw down himself and stepped on. But I don't know. I was wondering if maybe this is some sort of, it's not a humbling, but maybe he changes his approach or becomes different. But I think he's probably the guy. He is who we thought he was, a Sergio type thing for 20 years. It's just going to be kind of the same. But whatever. Any Bryson closing thoughts? No.
I think we're seeing like he's maybe the opposite player of Spieth. Game built for US Open, PGAs, and you know the Masters and the Open right now, as of right now, it doesn't really fit. I think like he could look at Phil Mickelson. He was awful for 20 years of his career at Opens. And then something clicked, like one, you know, like Bryson's the perfect example. Like, how is that guy not playing the Scottish the week before? It seems like fundamentally important for him to get out and play links golf a little bit more for him to have some success. Like get out of your, you know, your little trackman setup, your lab, and go play golf, like experience life a little bit.
Right. So, all right. Anything else as we wrap up?
Nothing else.
Men's Open, last men's major of the year. All right. It's a fantastic week.
Congrats to Colin Morikawa. It's exciting to have a new American. I think it's easy. You can clearly say at this point he's a superstar. And, you know, look forward to him throwing the media more catnip.
We're on to the sod farm. We're on to the FedEx Cup playoffs. We're on to the Olympics. Just, I got to be honest with you, like, I don't know where we go from here. I mean, I'm not going to get juiced about anything, probably till the Ryder Cup. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe the Olympics will be great. I don't know. But this has been a lot of major championship golf over the last 11 months. Thank you for your guys' continued support, for your, I don't know, interaction. You guys send us, keep us, you know, amused as much as anybody. So thank you all for your support of the major championship weeks. We'll be back on Wednesday. Keep it rolling.